Today's scripture is from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 13. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man.
Over the past month and a half, we've been looking at some of the writings in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs, at least in my opinion, has a lot of very wise and hopeful teachings on a myriad of subjects. It's a very practical book for life. For example, Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Similar proverb, Proverbs 22, verse 15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Those are very practical, very wise, and encouraging verses, and it gives hope that when you train your child the right way and you discipline them, they're going to follow that training for the rest of their lives and they won't grow up to be fools. There are other hopeful proverbs, like Proverbs 16, verse 3, commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established. That's a very reassuring verse. So if you dedicate your work to God, as that verse talks about, and seek to honor Him, He'll cause your work to succeed and your plans to be fulfilled. A problem arises, however, when there are exceptions. And there are always exceptions, as you know, to every rule. Because the Proverbs, as I've stated in the past, and as you already know, they're not guarantees. Like when a child is trained and disciplined properly, but becomes a fool anyway when they get older. Or when you dedicate your work to God, but your plans were not established like you thought the Proverbs was guaranteeing. And when that happens, we might begin to doubt God. We might begin to doubt the truth of His Word. How do you reconcile that when those things happen? Many reconcile that by thinking, well, I must have done something wrong as I was rearing my child. Or that when I committed my plans to God, He must not have liked my plans because they were not established. When your children don't follow the teachings that you instilled in them, or when your plans that you committed to God do not succeed, how do we cope with that? Because that happens all the time in life. I once told a young lady that she was going to be really sorry she broke up with me because I was going to be a great architect. And I don't know what those two had in common, but I was desperate. However, my dream of becoming a great architect never materialized, but I'm okay with that. And I've been okay with that for a very long time. The book of Ecclesiastes addresses these issues. If you've ever read the book of Ecclesiastes, you kind of come away thinking, what happened to this author that he has such a pessimistic view of life? And limited wisdom, I'm not sure he's being pessimistic. I think he's more like being realistic and has some advice on how to get along better in this life. Ecclesiastes is a book that helps kind of balance out what the book of Proverbs teaches. And that doesn't mean that the book of Proverbs is all pie in the sky. The book of Proverbs, as I mentioned, is practical wisdom for everyday living. Ecclesiastes is also practical wisdom for everyday living. It helps you cope with your human condition and helps you find joy and hope and contentment in a life where there are many limitations. In the reading you heard in that Jared read in Ecclesiastes 3, the author indicated that God is active in our world. And he has determined, the way he's established it and the way he works is that certain events are going to take place at certain times, and those events are going to have to take place at those times. And it should be very reassuring, at least it is to me, that God is active. And he's working continually to fulfill his plans. And we know his plans will be good. And that doesn't mean, however, that he controls every single action that occurs in life. That doesn't mean he moves my arm from here to here. But it doesn't mean he can't either. But I'm not convinced that he does. The author asks the question in chapter 3, verse 9. That's the same question he asked in the beginning of the book in chapter 1, verse 3. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun, meaning on this earth? It's kind of like asking the question, what am I doing here and why am I doing it? You know, there's a lot to do in this life, right? I mean, you have to take care of yourself. You have to sometimes get others you have to take care of, whether you're single or you have a family. I mean, there's just a lot to do. And it's if you do absolutely nothing for a month, you'll be dead. You have to feed yourself, you have to care for yourself, you have a lot of responsibilities that God has given you in this life. You not only have secular work to do, but you have spiritual work to do, at least for those among us who are Christians. There's a lot of busyness with which to be busy in this life. And in that same chapter, chapter 3, verse 11, the New Century Version translates this as, God has given them meaning us, mankind, a desire to know the future. He does everything just right and on time, but people can never completely understand what he is doing. So here's our first clue that there's a great deal in this life that we're not going to figure out. We all kind of would like to know, you know, what our activities to what our activities in which we engage are going to lead. You know, we want to know what the outcomes are going to be before we, at least we like to, before we get involved in something, or when we are involved in something. And it would be nice to know what God is doing and what help we can expect from him. There are examples in the Bible of God telling people what he was going to do. I mean, lots of examples. Like, for instance, God told Abraham and Sarah they were going to have a child. You know, he told Abraham that Sodom and Gomorrah, he was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. He told Moses that he was going to harden Pharaoh's heart. I mean, there's lots of things that God told people in the Bible beforehand. But because of the way life is ordered and your human limitations, you're not always going to be able to discern the outcome. You don't know what the future holds. You have not really been given that privilege. You don't know what God is doing or whether what occurred was because of God's intervention. You know, I've often heard someone say when something good happens, that's a God thing. In fact, I've said that myself. But, you know, really, to be frank, I'm not sure. I can't know for sure if that was a God thing or not. And because of this inability to know, the author advises in verses 12 and 13 that there's nothing better for them, again referring to mankind, us, than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live, also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all of his toil, all of his work. This is God's gift to man. It's his gift to you. In other words, life, this life is a gift. So the author suggests that what your attitude should be is not to be so anxious about the future, but just Just try to enjoy today. Take pleasure in the daily activities and responsibilities of life and try to do good because life is a gift, a very precious gift, and you need to accept that. The best way to get along in life is really to accept the fact that you really can't know the future. You're not always going to be able to discern what the outcome will be of all of your plans, all of your activities, all of your responsibilities. You're just not going to know. There's so much that is beyond our control in life, and you can develop a lot of anxiety for yourself in trying to control what is impossible to control. My wife's not here, so I can talk about her, although she does often listen online to my message when she hasn't been here. But she likes to be in control. Maybe some of you have experienced that. Not necessarily of me, but in the way things turn out. When circumstances don't turn out the way she wants them to, that's frustrating for her. And it's frustrating for a lot of us. So we just have to remember that God is the one who's in control. You know, sometimes it just doesn't seem like he has everything under control, but he does. You know, he's in charge. He is reigning over his kingdom. We just need to have faith in him no matter what happens. And to try to keep in mind Romans 8:28, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. That's a great verse. Ought to be something you put on a refrigerator. You can get very discouraged. At least I do when you watch or listen to the news and see all the stuff happening in our world, and it just seems to be getting worse, all the negative things that are going on. I have a 10 TV app on my phone. Almost every day, I get a notification that somebody has been shot or killed in Columbus. Almost every day. And that's not unique to Columbus. That happens in a lot of large cities. In fact, the writer of Ecclesiastes kind of talks a little bit about this in chapter 4. In verse 1, he begins, "Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of the oppressed. And they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power. And there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive." Now, some of you might remember the name Elizabeth Smart, who at the young age of 14 was kidnapped out of the bedroom of her home while her parents were there sleeping. I mean, they were all sleeping. This was at night. She was abducted from her home in Salt Lake City, Utah, and became a slave wife. It's a 14-year-old girl, became a slave wife of a deranged man for 9 months before she was found and returned to her parents. She was raped at least once, every day for 9 months. And she talks of that horrifying experience that she went through that no one should have to endure. But unfortunately, it happened because of who the prince of this world is. An innocent child stolen out of her own bedroom. It just shouldn't happen. So you're going to experience frustrating times in your life, and I know that some of you already have. Some of your work or plans will not work out the way you hope they would. And you've probably already experienced that as well. There are going to be people who don't like you. You know, and for one reason or another, you may try your best to do something about it, but you may not succeed because you are limited in what you can do and what you can control. So you just have to deal with it. You have a limited amount of strength. You have a limited amount of knowledge. You have a limited amount of control, as I mentioned. You just have to deal with it. The author makes that very point in verse 17 of chapter 8. He says, I also saw all that God has done. Nobody can understand what God does here on earth. No matter how hard people try to understand, they cannot. Some things just don't make sense. And the best way, this author is telling us, the best way to deal with it is to accept it, because this was by design. In a book by Michael Guillen called Amazing Truths, he points out that astronomers have concluded that galaxies and galaxy clusters have some sort of exotic material that's invisible to us. And they're calling it dark matter. They don't really know exactly what it is yet. They're not really even absolutely sure that it exists. In addition, astrophysicists have discovered something they're calling dark energy. They've concluded that dark energy makes up some 68% of the total universe, and it makes up 27% of dark matter. Which means, only 5% of the entire universe is visible to us. 95% is hidden. You know, with all of man's advances in science, science is still 95% in the dark. And really, that doesn't surprise me when you think about what God has created. Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. The things that are revealed belong to us and our children, so that we may do all the words of this law. In chapter 5 of Ecclesiastes, the author cautions his readers about reactions to these life situations. In verses 2 and 3, he gives some very practical advice. Think before you speak. Be careful about what you say to God, because God's in heaven and you're on the earth. So say only a few words to God. Now, you might say, well, yeah, that sounds like doesn't want us to pray or something. This was written in the context of making vows to God, making promises. But I think it's very applicable in this circumstance. You may have the best of intentions. You know, you may make a promise to God. God, if you'll do this for me, I promise I'll be faithful. I promise I'll go to church every Sunday, or whatever the promise is. And you do everything in your power to make that happen, to succeed at that, to fulfill your promise. But you may fall short. You know, because number one, you're limited in what you can accomplish. And number two, you don't know what the future holds. So just be careful about what you say to God, about what you promise. There's a saying that you can do whatever you set your mind to do. And that's true sometimes, but sometimes it isn't. So we need to just kind of let God be God and not question His actions or lack thereof. We're really not in a position to question God. As Paul indicated to the Romans in Romans 9:20, shall what is formed say to the one who formed it, why did you make me like this? In other words, it's absurd for you to question God and what He does or does not do. And God made that point rather emphatically to Job. Job was upset with God for all that had happened to him. And God responded to him by saying, would you condemn me to justify yourself? So when our puny little finite minds and our limited physical abilities inhibit the achievements of our goals and dreams, when our prayers of what we think God should do for us and for others don't pan out, we sometimes want to question God. Why, God? But I prayed, God. You said you'd answer prayer. What we really need to do, rather than question God, is simply accept what happens, thank God, and move on. Your purpose in life is not to accomplish your will. Your purpose in life is to accomplish His will. And God is going to, His will be accomplished, which, you know, may interfere with our will. It may not be our will. God is the one who created you with limitations, so your response should be one of humility. When we were rearing our children, our goal was to rear them in such a way that they would follow God's plan for their lives and be as involved in God's work and in the church as we, as Kim and I, have been. Well, it didn't happen. Well, at least it hasn't happened yet. My son, I've known a lot of preachers whose sons turned out to be preachers also. I thought, well, that'd be cool. That'd be cool if my son could become a preacher. Well, he's not a preacher. He's a police officer. But I'm still very proud of him. It just didn't follow my plan. That wasn't my plan. And I just have to deal with it. You will be able to navigate life much better if you just recognize that he's God and you're not. And that you are very limited in how much you can control, how much you can know, and that your will is not always going to be his will. So our goal then is to try to align our will with his. Life is hard to figure out sometimes. I'm sure you understand that, but often it doesn't go according to plan. Often it's not fair, but life is a gift from God. You've heard the proverb, life is what you make of it, and there's truth in that. Such that, you know, the way you live, the choices you make will impact your life for good or worse. But sometimes life isn't what you make of it. Life just happens, and it wasn't your choice. Yesterday there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about an interview of a clinical psychologist and a social philosopher by the name of Jordan Peterson. He was an associate professor of psychology at Harvard, and he was a full professor of psychology at the University of Toronto in Canada for about 20 years. And the interview was really to promote his book, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. And in the book, he offers some advice on the eternal question of how to live. And his advice was this: know life's limits. See and analyze your own limits. Build on what you've got. And I thought, hey, that kind of sounds like almost biblical. Psychologist, you know? So I kept reading, and I learned that he has a high regard for stories and insights into human behavior, into the meaning of things, in other words, and then it said in the Old and New Testaments. He said, their stories exist for a reason. They are powerful indicators of reality. He's talking about the Old Testament. It isn't very often that you hear those words from a psychology professor, but I was encouraged about that. The author of Ecclesiastes believes that true wisdom involves recognizing our human limitations. There's only so much you can know and do. Enjoy and be thankful for each day as it comes. Acknowledge your limitations because you're human. And that's life. So just deal with it. As I mentioned at the beginning of the service, I would be referring to the communication card again. And so please, if you would, look on the back of your communication card at this time. There are three steps that I've given you that you can take. Memorize Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. Things that are revealed belong to us and to our children so that we may do all the words of this law. If memorization is not your thing, then the next step you can do is just read Ecclesiastes 3. I would recommend reading all of Ecclesiastes, but it's 12 chapters, so you could read. Just read Ecclesiastes 3, that would be great. If you don't know how to read, or even if you do, I suggest you accept the deal with it challenge. You know, when life doesn't go the way you hoped, rather than get discouraged and angry at God, just thank God, deal with it, and move on. Try to enjoy each day because you never know when it will be your last. I encourage you this morning, if you don't believe in Jesus, put your faith in Jesus. Not because it will necessarily make life on earth better for you, but because it promises a much better life in the future. It'll be the life that you dreamed of. but not if you don't put your faith in Jesus. So this morning, if you haven't done that yet, I strongly encourage you to do it. I don't regret a day of having given my life over to God. So this morning, as Robin leads us in this song, it's an opportunity to put your faith in Jesus. So let us know. Robin, let's stand and sing.